Hey, everybody. It is Friday, March 15th. The Ides of March are upon us, Jill. You're listening to the Mo News Podcast. I'm Moshe Wanunu.
And I'm Jill Wagner. This is the place where we bring you just the facts.
And we read all the news and read between the lines so you don't have to. Of course, the phrase made famous by William Shakespeare in writing Julius Caesar, beware of the Ides of March, because of course, that was a very bad day for Julius Caesar, but I hope it is a great day for the rest of you.
It is a great day, Moshe, for anybody who likes NSYNC. They reunited at a Justin Timberlake concert in Los Angeles earlier this week. And I know you posted the video on Instagram. I may have watched it 100 times.
Yeah, you know, if you wax certain nostalgia for the 90s, early 2000s, seeing NSYNC together, singing together for the first time in a decade was pretty cool.
I was reading a bunch of the comments. People are like, they're definitely going to tour. They're definitely going to get back together. I don't know, but it was fun.
Well, I mean, Justin does have the new album out, so I think it's a way to help boost promotion for him. At the same time, I did get some comments from people being like, I didn't realize how old they are. By the way, Justin, apparently the suits from the 90s, the big boxy suits, the suit jackets, is that back?
You're asking the wrong person.
Because Timberlake was wearing that in the at the concert. I was like, I haven't seen boxy suits like that since my bar mitzvah in 1995.
I noticed he was wearing an extra large suit.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it they're back.
He went to my tailor from the North Shore of Chicago.
Okay, let's get to some headlines here. Sharp words from the most powerful Democrat on Capitol Hill for Israel. Chuck Schumer calling for new elections, saying that Benjamin Netanyahu is an obstacle to peace. How those comments are playing. Meanwhile, elections are underway in Russia, where Vladimir Putin will most certainly win a fifth term.
People have only been voting for a couple hours over a three-day election, Jill, but I think it's fair to say we're going to make the call here on the podcast. Putin will win.
U.S. lawmakers want ByteDance to sell TikTok, but to whom? We'll tell you some of the possible names. SpaceX's Starship completes its third test flight. Why NASA is calling it a success, even though the spacecraft blew up. Supreme Court Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Sonia Sotomayor, ideological opposites, are uniting to promote civility. The Hilton hotel chain is making a big bet on college towns. And forget the coffee break, there is a new office ritual, Zyn nicotine pouches. We'll explain. Plus, it is Friday. Cheers to the freaking weekend, what we are watching, reading, and eating.
Yeah, we don't do On the Same History on Fridays because we have that segment, but we tried to give you a little bit at the top there with Julius Caesar. I couldn't hold back.
You can't help yourself. Okay, let's start with U.S. politics in the Middle East. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on Thursday called on Israel to hold new elections, saying Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has got to go. Schumer is the first Jewish majority leader in the Senate and the highest ranking Jewish official in the United States. In a 40-minute speech to the Senate, he said that there are four impediments to peace: Hamas, Mahmoud Abbas, who is the president of the Palestinian Authority, radical right-wing Israelis, and the Israeli prime minister. That last impediment getting the most attention.
I also believe Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel. He has put himself in coalition with far-right extremists like Ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gavir. And as a result, he has been too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza, which is pushing support for Israel worldwide to historic lows.
Moshe, as you noted on Instagram, the irony here is that polls show that most Israelis themselves want Netanyahu out. There have been rallies and protests calling for early elections. But this will actually probably end up making Netanyahu stronger in Israel because nobody wants to be told what to do.
Right. They might not like him, but they don't need you telling them not to like him and what to do with him.
So to that end, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell weighed in, calling out Schumer for hypocrisy.
It is grotesque and hypocritical for Americans who hyperventilate about foreign interference in our own democracy to call for the removal of a democratically elected leader of Israel. Make no mistake, the Democratic Party doesn't have an anti-Bibi problem. It has an anti-Israel problem.
Bibi is, of course, the nickname for Benjamin Netanyahu.
So the next elections in Israel are not actually scheduled until October of 2026, so more than 2 years from now. And again, many Israelis don't support Netanyahu. In fact, his popularity, his approval rating is around 20%. If that gives you any indication, they hold him responsible for failing to stop the October 7th attacks. He was already a very divisive figure inside Israel, but then the terror attacks that happened really hurt his image as the guy who can keep the country secure. So for most Israelis, they say we need to unite during this war and have elections afterwards, though there has been a growing movement within Israel calling for early elections, but that really is only supported by about a third of the country right now, and you don't see any more momentum in that direction. As far as response to Chuck Schumer on Thursday, Netanyahu's party put out a statement saying Israel is an independent and proud democracy that elected Prime Minister Netanyahu. We're not a banana republic. Benny Gantz, he's part of the war cabinet, also one of Netanyahu's main rivals. And in fact, if you look at opinion polls, probably the next prime minister of Israel. So an opponent of his, he said that the language coming from the U.S. is not acceptable. It's counterproductive. And again, reiterated that Israel is a democracy that makes its own decisions. It doesn't need interference from other countries. What it does show back here in the U.S. is how much public opinion, specifically amongst Democrats, is shifting when it comes to this war. And so with the White House, with Chuck Schumer, other Democrats freaked out about progressives and the left, who increasingly are critical of U.S. support for Israel, and they want to get out there and be very vocal on this issue. Even though the funny thing is, this helps Democrats domestically because they're trying to show the left flank of their party that they support them. And it, at the same time, supports Netanyahu in Israel, who stands up to America and shows that, you know, he won't just be kicked around by other countries. So ironically, some people say maybe they concocted this together because it's helping both of them right now, both Biden and Netanyahu. Over at the White House, they declined to weigh in on the call for new elections, saying they're very much focused on the temporary ceasefire, getting one in place very soon. And it does come as there appear to be developments to that end, late breaking on Thursday. So look out for potential developments related to a ceasefire, prisoner for hostage swap this weekend. We'll keep you up to date over on the Instagram account. It does come as you saw some political movement in the region over on the Palestinian side. The president, Mahmoud Abbas, 88, going on 89 years old, has appointed a new prime minister, a guy by the name of Mohammed Mustafa, to form a government for him. But keep in mind, Abbas is not elected. Mustafa is not elected. Mustafa also a close friend of Abbas. So while the U.S. and others are calling for reform within the Palestinian Authority, this is probably not the type of reform they were looking for, because he's basically replaced one prime minister who's a buddy of his with another prime minister who's a buddy of his. So that's something they have to figure out, because the hope is the Palestinian Authority run by Hamas, but more significantly, a Palestinian Authority, reformed Palestinian Authority with new leadership, is seen as the key here to run Gaza after the war.
Okay, now to Russia, which is currently holding a presidential election. It runs 3 days starting today. Spoiler alert, Vladimir Putin will win another term.
Yeah, the only question is, does he give himself 75%, 85%? I mean, we laugh, it's sad, but that is the situation when it comes to these types of authoritarian regimes. Is they literally, their debate internally is, how many votes should we give ourselves this election?
Yeah, the Kremlin manages the entire political system, including elections. The Kremlin also controls TV and media in Russia. So Putin has been running Russia for about two decades already. This would be his fifth term. Back in 2021, he signed a law that lets him run for two more presidential terms. This potentially keeps him in office until 2036. As for this election, the only anti-war candidates have actually been barred from running. And we know that Putin opposition leader Alexei Navalny died last month in a penal colony. Now, his former aide has called this election a circus and a propaganda effort. There's actually voting in the four Ukrainian regions that Russia invaded in September of 2022 and said that it would annex. And that is in violation of international law.
Yeah, back to those anti-war candidates, Jill, they were both kicked off the ballot for, quote, registration document issues. You need to have 100,000 signatures to run against Putin. And the courts run by Putin determined only 95,000 were legitimate on one of them and said there were issues with the other person's documents, which is how they basically were able to ban those two individuals from running. And so what'll be interesting is less this election, we know what the outcome is, but more what Putin does after the election. Some analysts have been watching closely and believe that he's keeping some of his most unpopular moves until after this election. One could include a second military mobilization, given the number of Russians who have died or been injured in the war now more than 2 years in so far in Ukraine. The sense is that he's going to have to draft more soldiers to keep this war effort up. And remember, that was met with a huge amount of protests, as well as some people leaving the country a couple of years ago. So look out for that, as well as more repressive measures at home. Also, the country of Moldova, which sits on the other side of Ukraine, increasingly worried that it'll become a target of Russia after the war. There's a small region of Moldova that is in the Kremlin's crosshairs that is majority Russian speaking. And so they believe that Putin will use that as an excuse to potentially invade there. For history's sake here, Putin is already Russia's longest serving ruler since Joseph Stalin back in the 40s and 50s. And he's going to seek to surpass him with this current term. Jill, I remember I was in high school back in 1999 when Vladimir Putin was first elected. And now we're, you know, a quarter century into his rule as it continues. You mentioned Navalny's recent death in his final court appearances before he died. He urged people to vote against Putin. His widow is speaking out, calling on the EU not to recognize the elections in a recent address, saying Putin killed my husband exactly a month before these so-called elections. These are fake elections. Do not believe this propaganda.
All right, Moshe, we have plenty of news coming up, but now a word from a couple of our sponsors. First up, Good Chop, which offers fully customizable boxes of high-quality meat and seafood delivered straight to your door on your schedule. The products are vacuum sealed and frozen at peak freshness, so you can stock your freezer and cook when you want. Choose from over 70 high-quality cuts, 100% grass-fed ribeyes, USDA, prime, filet mignon. They also offer sustainable and wild-caught seafood like salmon, Pacific cod, scallops, shrimp, and more. Moshe, we recently cooked the salmon in my house. It was absolutely delicious and really easy and nice to know that it was an option and we could do it whenever it was convenient for us. Now, unlike many other companies, Good Chop sources its meat and seafood exclusively from American farms and fisheries, so you can support local family farms and independent ranchers right here in the U.S., and it doesn't cost a fortune. Good Chop's price per meal starts at just $3.74. Good Chop especially prides itself on sourcing meat that comes with no antibiotics or added hormones ever. There are no artificial ingredients, only the good stuff. They are so confident in the quality of their cuts that they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to goodchop.com/monews120 and use the code monews120 to get $120 off across your first four boxes. That is monews120 at goodchop.com/monews120 for $120 off.
All right, one more sponsor we want to get to today, longtime partner of ours here at Mo News, Athletic Greens AG1 powder. We're always talking about health trends, food trends, how difficult it is to get all of the nutrients that you need for your body on a daily basis. And one way to try to get all the important ones is Athletic Greens AG1 powder. I first tried it more than a year ago. It's just one scoop with a glass of water in the morning. It's easy, it's quick, it lets you get on with your day knowing that you've gotten over 75 important ingredients, including tons of vitamins and minerals. It also has pre and probiotics to support digestion and gut health. Jill, it comes up all the time from the Mo News fans, including at our Mo News team meetup recently, where some people were asking about AG1. Did you and Jill really try it? I'm like, yes, yes. We only endorse and partner with products that we try first. Important to note that. So with your first purchase of AG1, they're offering a special deal to the Mo News community. Athletic Greens is giving Mo News listeners a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs of AG1. You can visit drinkag1.com/monews. That is drinkag1.com/monews to take advantage of this offer. You can get a discounted monthly subscription or try it just one time for 1 month. Again, one more time, the number one, drinkag1.com/monews for the special deal.
Time now for the speed read from Bloomberg. Former Trump official and Wall Street exec Steve Mnuchin is looking to purchase TikTok from its Chinese parent company. It comes as a number of companies and potential investors are chomping at the bit after House lawmakers passed that bipartisan bill that will force ByteDance, which owns TikTok, to sell the company or face a ban in the United States. The former U.S. Treasury Secretary has spoken to potential co-investors about acquiring TikTok, declining to give any specifics in an interview with CNBC. U.S. lawmakers are pushing for that ban unless the owner ByteDance divests it, driven by concerns over the Chinese government's influence on the American public. It is unclear whether Mnuchin, who runs a private investment firm that counts Saudi Arabia among its backers, will be able to pull off a deal. TikTok's U.S. business would be worth anywhere from $30 to $100 billion, depending on estimates. He told CNBC it is a great business. It should be owned by a U.S. business. There is no way the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company run something like this in China. TikTok intends to exhaust all legal challenges before it considers any kind of divestiture, sources tell Bloomberg. Mnuchin says that under his plan, no investor would own more than 10% of TikTok, and existing investors would have the option to roll over into the new ownership.
So what's interesting is Mnuchin, back when he was in the Trump administration, was part of the initial Trump talks to get ByteDance to divest from TikTok. Remember, that was all Trump's whole thing, sell or be banned. Now Trump has reversed himself, but Mnuchin is among those who sees an opportunity here as the government resurrects the plan to force the Chinese company to sell TikTok. Back then, Microsoft expressed some interest. Oracle ultimately outbid Microsoft, but then the deal effectively faded. Though Oracle did get a deal for $1 billion, allegedly, to house all of TikTok's data here in the U.S. That deal continues. Oracle's been pretty quiet when it comes to the legislation on Capitol Hill the past couple of weeks, but they're still seen as a potential buyer here. So is Microsoft, though Microsoft has a huge stake in OpenAI, so there's regulatory questions there. Who else could buy? Well, Meta would certainly be interested, but would you let Mark Zuckerberg own Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and TikTok? Probably not. Then you have Google, which is in a really interesting place, Jill, because Google owns YouTube, a TikTok competitor. So again, could be antitrust issues. At the same time, Google has the Android store where they sell the TikTok app. So they might be part of litigation on the other side of the coin, pushing back against kicking TikTok out of the store. So a lot of complexity there. Among other folks who are interested, there's an investor named Bobby Kotick. He's the former chief executive over at Activision Blizzard, the gaming company that was bought recently for tens of billions of dollars by Microsoft. So again, you know, you hear the same names over and over again, because at anywhere from $30 to $100 billion, there are only so many people or companies out there that can gather the funds to do this. And that's why when you look at it, every major app in the world, most of them are owned out of Silicon Valley, TikTok being one of the only ones. So many of those companies see an opportunity here for themselves. And that's the argument you've heard from Trump and others, by the way, right? The people who are critical of this think you're only going to make Meta and some of these other tech companies even stronger by pushing this. At the same time, legitimate national security concerns here about how China can use the app, use the data, tweak the algorithm just a little bit to create chaos here in the US. So a lot of people with a lot of money watching this very closely.
I posted on my Instagram today, Alexis Ohanian, who is the co-founder of Reddit. He came out and said that he was very much in favor of TikTok having to either be sold or banned. And he said, simply for the reason that there is no way a company like TikTok owned by anyone in the US could run in China. So he was saying, just on the basis of that, right, and the double standard, it shouldn't be allowed to exist.
Right. China bans Facebook, bans Instagram, bans all these other apps from operating in their country. So why should the US allow China to profit here and potentially take advantage of it by manipulating things?
Okay, from the Washington Post, SpaceX's Starship spacecraft made it to space and traveled more than halfway around the world Thursday before coming to a fiery end over the Indian Ocean. It is the most successful demonstration to date of the vehicle that NASA has chosen to one day land astronauts on the moon. While the spacecraft did not survive re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere, it did complete a number of key milestones that were hailed as major steps toward helping SpaceX perfect the art of flying the world's largest and most powerful rocket. In addition to a near-perfect launch, the craft flew for nearly an hour after lifting off from SpaceX's private launch site in South Texas. All 33 of the booster's engines ignited successfully, and after nearly 3 minutes, the Starship spacecraft separated and began a journey across the globe powered by its six engines.
Yeah, that's important to note as you talk about space technology, is This is still a success, even though it didn't end great because they're testing various systems. This is the third test flight for the Starship system. NASA right now is investing $4 billion in developing Starship because NASA doesn't have the budget it used to in the 60s and 70s. It has to rely these days on private companies. And so the goal here is to get this ready to go so it can then launch humans back to the moon in the coming years. The goal is to have it done in the next couple of years. We'll see if that happens. SpaceX will also use this rocket to launch the next generation of internet satellites. It's about to get a whole lot more crowded up there in outer space with more and more satellites as we, you know, rely on that sort of technology here on Earth. On this flight, the rocket achieved a speed of 16,000 miles per hour, which would have allowed the spacecraft to enter orbit around Earth. Instead, SpaceX commanded the spacecraft to re-enter the atmosphere over the Indian Ocean. But that's where it ran into an issue. After slamming into a thickening atmosphere, it generated a heat of 2,600 degrees Fahrenheit and did not survive re-entry. So we'll continue to watch this rocket develop. This is just one of the many key elements to returning humans back into orbit around the moon. The NASA's goal is next year. We'll see if it happens. And then putting people back on the moon in 2026.
From the Associated Press, with the Supreme Court's approval hovering near record lows, two justices have teamed up to promote the art of disagreeing without being nasty about it. In joint appearances less than 3 weeks apart, Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Sonia Sotomayor, ideological opposites, said that the need for civil debate has never been greater than it is in these polarized times.
Jill, can we have them speak to the people in our comments on the Instagram page?
I don't want to go too off track, Moshe, but is it getting any better? I take it from your comment that it's not.
We closed the comments. We reopened the comments yesterday with an edict to everyone that you're out of timeout now. And so we'd like you to be civil again. We'll see how it goes. Otherwise, we're going to sick the Supreme Court justices on you.
So they say that the Supreme Court, where voices don't get raised in anger, can be a model for the rest of the country. Confidence in the court fell to its lowest level in 50 years following the abortion decision in June of 2022. And polling done just before the court began its new term in October found little change. The justices' appearances hark back to the traveling roadshow conservative Antonin Scalia and liberal Stephen Breyer put on about 15 or so years ago. But Breyer and Scalia cheerfully debated their different approaches to the law. Barrett and Sotomayor acknowledge that they see things differently, but instead focus on their determination to disagree civilly.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because we told you about the case last week regarding Trump on the ballot, where Amy Coney Barrett actually wrote her own opinion because she felt that while she agreed with Sotomayor, actually, and the other two liberal justices on the court going too far, she didn't like the language they used. She felt it was uncivil. So she wrote her own opinion recently. Barrett, we should say, is 52. She's the youngest member of the court, a Trump appointee who took the slot just about a month after the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg in that election year hearing that was extremely contentious. It comes, as you mentioned, there's a lot of distrust for the court and how some of them are getting their roles. I mentioned the Barrett push in that last month before the election, but 4 years previous, Obama had an appointee that the Republicans effectively blocked because it was an election year, letting Trump take that slot that would have gone to Merrick Garland, a Obama appointee. He's now Biden's attorney general, but that would eventually go to Neil Gorsuch once Trump took office. So while they're out there talking about civil, there have been pretty sharp disagreements in arguments. But I think the point they're trying to make, Jill, is that behind closed doors, while they're on the bench, they try to stick to the law, not make things personal. And behind the scenes, reportedly, despite their political differences, several of them remain pretty close.
I like that they're doing this, Moshe. I feel like we need more of this.
I agree with you 100%, Jill. I know you... You joked before the podcast, you're like, Moshe, I can't believe you let this story run in the pod. I'm like, you know what? This is positive, even though it feels a little Pollyannish. Ultimately, if they can impact, you know, people, and then by us telling their story, impact even more people, you know, Barrett saying things like, we don't interrupt each other. We don't raise our voices at each other. We have a difference of opinion. At the end of the day, we understand we're all Americans and we're going to have civil disagreement here. It's an important message at a time where people literally are moving away from their neighbors or stopping conversations or relationships with family and friends over their politics.
Yep. Young people say they won't date people who have different political opinions than they do.
Yeah.
So this is where we are. It leaves very little room for compromise and discussion.
Well, Aunt Sonia and Aunt Amy are on it for everybody.
Okay, from the Wall Street Journal, Hilton has agreed to pay $210 million for a hotel operator that focuses on college towns, a bet that business near campuses can fuel the next leg of the company's growth. It is acquiring Graduate Hotels, a 10-year-old company that owns and operates dozens of hotels in some of the country's biggest college towns, from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Oxford, Mississippi, to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hilton's chief executive saying that college towns have been historically underserved by their current hotels. Graduate properties tend to be closer to campuses, and they strive to offer guests a stay that reflects the community, so they're a bit more boutique. The chain's Chapel Hill Hotel, for example, has a replica of Michael Jordan's University of North Carolina dorm room, as well as a plush carpeted indoor basketball court. That's very cool. The Madison, Wisconsin Hotels Bar is called Camp Tripolindy. It is a nod to the 1986 movie Back to School, starring Rodney Dangerfield, that was filmed on the University of Wisconsin campus. Key cards at many of the properties are styled as student ID cards for the nearby school.
Hilton is really focused here on reunions, parents' weekends, typical university business, sports events, etc., that'll drive demand here, and that hope that that brand is an opportunity to establish an early relationship with college students and build loyalty over time. So they're going to wrap the brand's Hilton reward system into this to really help their growth. And they think that Graduate here can become a mega brand with an opportunity to expand to anywhere between 400 and 500 hotels across the country. Hilton is not the only company with its eye on college towns. In 2023, a timeshare operator, Travel and Leisure, struck a deal with Sports Illustrated to have branded resorts in college towns, including in Tuscaloosa down in Alabama. And for Hilton, which has typically been building up its own brands over time, it now has 23 brands. This is a rare acquisition for them.
I totally get this, Moshe. I do think that there is a need on these college campuses, at least the ones that I have been to, for more hotel rooms. I know we were planning a trip potentially in the fall to Columbus, to Ohio State. And one of our biggest concerns with it's a bunch of couples is like, where are we going to stay? Because there are so few hotel rooms. Okay, from Business Insider, the new office ritual, Zyn nicotine pouches. Nicotine pouches are finding an audience with people who view them as a healthier alternative to other products. So Zyn is a brand of nicotine pouch that users often place under their lips to get a boost. Business Insider spoke to five men with prior nicotine or tobacco use who said that they use Zyn to help them focus at work. One of them saying, if I need to work on something that's a little bit more important than other things, it's just part of the routine. All of them say that they turned to Zyn because they viewed it as healthier or cleaner than dip, vaping, or cigarettes. A 24-year-old senior analyst who was a self-described part of the Juul population before switching to Zyn said the pouches, quote, get me into the right headspace and keep me focused more or less. So he works 5 days a week in the office, but says there's no stigma around using it there. He starts his days taking a Zyn with his morning coffee and has between 5 to 10 in the course of a day. Zyn and coffee. Osh.
A lot of addiction there between caffeine and nicotine potential there, Jill. Zyn has been available for sale for about 10 years now, but has gotten more popular over the last couple of years. Shipments of the nicotine pouches were up 62% last year over the previous year. They've also found favor among Wall Street traders, media figures like Tucker Carlson, and Republican lawmakers. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer actually recently called for federal action to crack down on Zyn. He says the nicotine pouches pose a danger to teens, and they're being marketed to kids right now as an alternative to e-cigarettes. So he's urging the FTC and the FDA to investigate Zyn. So we will watch that. Marjorie Taylor Greene responded to that by saying, this is a Zynsurrection. That was her response. Clearly one of the people who favors using Zyn. And then, of course, there are Zynfluencers, like influencers, but Zynfluencers, get it?
I get it.
They post videos on social media of themselves slipping pouches under their lips.
Well, Moshe, if the news thing doesn't work out for you.
I was never into nicotine, thankfully, and I don't plan on it. But listen, you know, if times are tough and we're pushing Zyn on the podcast, you guys know that we're really struggling here. No, actually, I mean, in all seriousness, we try to make a point of only promoting brands that we feel are good for you. The question, of course, when it comes to Zyn is a number of people say, well, this is a pretty clean product, but of course, it still carries risks because nicotine can increase heart rate, increase blood pressure. So someone with cardiovascular disease or prone to it might want to be careful using it. So we're probably late to the game here on Zin for some of you, but certainly an interesting trend piece out of the Journal this week.
It is Friday. Cheers to the freaking weekend. Time for what we are watching, reading, and eating. Mosh, what are you watching?
So a friend of mine, Amy Chozick, political reporter from the New York Times, wrote a book called Chasing Hillary about a group of female reporters, embedded journalists from the 2016 campaign. It has now officially been turned into a series picked up by HBO Max. I guess it's just called Max now. So that premiered yesterday. So looking forward to that as a former campaign embed myself from 2008. You know, it's a young group of reporters, typically in their 20s, who give up their lives for a year to chase these presidential candidates around. So this is her memoir turned Max series, and looking forward to watching that. Jill, what are you watching?
So Mosh, I got on a little bit of an Oscar kick, and I wanted to watch a couple of the movies that were nominated for Oscars and won some Oscars. So I just watched The Holdovers with Paul Giamatti, and I have to say I loved it. So I'm watching that. Okay, Mosh, what are we reading?
Jill, I'll stick with the politics theme here. A new book out called The Lie Detectives. It's a book all about elections and disinformation, going inside how the campaigns are both fighting it and adding to the disinformation. It's by another political reporter who I know from my campaign trail days, named Sasha Eisenberg. He's out with the book. So I actually have been reading that, just interviewed him for a premium podcast that'll be out next week. Jill, what are you reading?
Okay, I'm reading a book called Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depends on It. It's by Chris Vaughn, the FBI's former head international hostage negotiator. And it basically draws from his experiences negotiating with terrorists and bad guys and gives tips and techniques for how to persuade people to do what you want. And that's whether it's in your personal life or professional life. The title comes from the idea that if you're negotiating with kidnappers, you can't say, all right, you keep two people and give us two people back. You need to get everybody home. My friends Greg and Michelle recommended it. They actually dropped it off for me. And I think they both listened to this podcast. So thank you guys. I'm only on chapter 3 and I've already picked up a bunch of really good tips.
Have you used any of these tactics on me yet?
I haven't, but I don't really talk to anybody. But Mosh, I will try and I will tell you afterward if it worked.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm not going to give you a heads up. By the way, Mosh, in this conversation, I'm going to use a bunch of techniques I learned. No, but it's great. It's interesting. The first couple of chapters really talk about how to be a better listener to make the person that you're talking to feel like you're getting what they're saying. Mosh, what are you eating?
Jill, I'm into kettle-cooked potato chips. We just got our latest order from Thrive Market in the house, so I have been trying those out. By the way, we should note we now have a partnership with Thrive. You can get 30% off your first order and a free gift when you join. Effectively, Thrive is an annual membership. You get food delivered to your door. It's healthy food from top-selling organic brands at wholesale prices. So check out the link in the show notes to sign up and check it out.
I am a huge fan of Thrive, and I was turned on to it by your wife. She told me about it, and I've loved it ever since because it's really easy, at least for us, to get healthy-ish snacks. They have the healthier alternative to some of the junk food out there. And so I'm able to just buy a bunch of snacks that I don't feel terrible giving to my kids.
It's snacks, it's staples, it's pastas, it's rices. I mean, you fill your cupboards with what Thrive has to offer, and the price is right, and the health factor is right. So we've been loyal members for a while. I also learned about Thrive for the first time from my wife as well. So Alex,
thanks,
congrats
Alex.
On the continued influencing here. Again, there's a link in the show notes in the podcast app for 30% off. Jill, what are you making this weekend?
All right, so I'm going to try the newest TikTok trend that I, of course, learned about on Instagram probably a few weeks after it was trending on TikTok. It's called avocado bread. So it's not avocado toast. You basically mash together avocado, an egg, and cheese, and then you flatten it kind of like a piece of bread and cook it in the oven. And you can either eat it plain, like it's just a piece of bread, or you can use it like as bread and make a sandwich with it. And it's just kind of a low carb alternative. So I'm going to give it a shot.
Sounds good.
And I'll post on my Instagram, Jill R. Wagner, with my little cooking experiment to see how it goes.
All right. I think we're ready to close out for the week.
You're like, Jill. Okay. Enough about the avocado bread. All right. Thank you guys for listening to the Mo News podcast. If you like what you hear, Share this with your friends. It will help us grow. Follow us and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And don't forget to review us in the App Store.
We love the reviews. Have we told you about the reviews and how much we love them? They're great.
Live and div.
All right, everyone. Before we go, we should note of a special podcast edition over on the Premium Podcast out today with friend of the pod, Vlad Duthier of CBS News.
What? Tell me everything. I'm so excited.
Family's originally from Haiti. He's covered it extensively, and we dive into Haiti. It's basically your Haiti 101. How did it get here? Going back 200 years. It's fascinating. It's interesting. I think you guys will love it. That's over on the Premium Pod.
Did you talk at all about fatherhood? I can't wait to listen. Or is it just about
Haiti? That's a separate pod. This is just about Haiti.
I love Vlad. Okay, bye, everyone. Have a great weekend.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Mo News Podcast.